Welcome to a journey inside the soul of one of sports media's brightest minds. A profoundly nuanced odyssey called Stupodity. Hosted by the incomparable Stu Gotts, a man I consider a personal hero and icon of the industry. I want to make no bones about it. There is no Mike Greenberg today without the sensational Stu Gotts providing me the inspiration to chase my dream and challenge myself to be just half as brilliant as he is. Allow me, Mike Greenberg, a man who would probably today be doing traffic in Sioux Falls without Stu Gotts' influence, to welcome you to a truly transcendent sonic experience. This is Stupodity.
All right, welcome into another episode of Stupodity. This podcast has, we become bigger than Joe Rogan because of one thing and one thing only. It's an outlet. It's an outlet for stupidity. But not this week. This week, I wanted to do an episode. Stanzik wanted to do an episode in light of everything that's happening in our country right now. And we wanted to bring some folks on from ESPN, some friends on from ESPN, who don't normally have the platform, don't normally have the chance to speak on these issues or any issues, and certainly no issues more important than what we're dealing with over the past week. So we wanted to bring four people on and give them the opportunity to have a chance to speak and educate us. And the world's worst listener is sitting down and he is prepared to listen. So that is how we're going to attack this episode. I want to introduce the four people Stanzik and I are bringing on. One an old friend, three new friends. All four work behind the scenes at ESPN. And again, don't normally have this kind of platform to be able to share their feelings, share their thoughts on the recent events or really any events. In Cliff's case, one of the morning show producers, the only thing you probably, our audience probably knows about Cliff is the fact that I just yell Cliff all the time on Golic and Wingo. And I think we probably need to know a little bit more about Cliff than that. And I am ready to listen. So with that being said, as is Stanzik, and hopefully our audience is as well. With that being said, I want the four of you guys, if you don't mind, to introduce yourselves and tell our audience just a little bit about what you do at ESPN. Roy, most of our audience is familiar with you. We will start with you, my friend.
My name is Roy Bellamy. I am the producer of the Dan Lebatard Show with Stu Gotts. I got to make sure I put the name Stu Gotts in there because he might get angry.
Yeah, it's all right. We don't have
to. All right, then.
I've been living with it for 17 years, Roy.
It's yes, you have. Yes, I've heard. I've heard.
All right. Let's go to Shannon Penn, who I've known for quite some time. Spent some time in South Florida, looking very, very nice today. Shaved for the occasion, I see.
Absolutely. Look, I thought it was going to be a video. I went and shaved. I even showered the whole nine.
Shannon, only if you do something embarrassing, then it becomes a video. Okay? That's the only way. But Shannon, go ahead. Tell everyone what you do at ESPN.
Yeah, my name is Shannon Penn. I am the producer of First Take Your Take on ESPN Radio. I've been with ESPN for 5 years. Some of my previous stops at ESPN included producing the Freddie and Fitzsimmons show, as well as The Right Time with Bomani Jones when it was a radio show. So, hello.
All right. Hello. Tarika Foster joins us as well. Tarika, go ahead. By the way, Bomani Jones has been, and he's been on our show a couple of times over the past week. Bomani has been as good as anyone and is as good as anyone at our network or any network for that matter. Sports news does not matter in talking about what has transpired over the past week, and not just the past week, the past 100 years, hundreds of years for that matter. Tarika Foster, please introduce yourself. Tell everyone what it is you do for ESPN.
Hey guys, I am Tarika Foster Brasby. I am a digital podcast producer on the Around the Rim podcast, which is our women's basketball podcast. You may have occasionally heard my voice or seen my face on the Fantasy Focused Football podcast, and I have previously worked with the His and Hers podcast featuring Jamel and Michael Smith. So, just thanks for inviting me on.
Thank you for doing it. We appreciate it, Cliff. The floor is yours, my friend. Cliff!
So I'm Cliff. I'm a production assistant here at ESPN, primarily working on Golic and Wingo as the board op. And like Stugatz, can you hit it? Can you hit me with it, the cliff?
Cliff!
That's how your audience is going to know me. That's the only way, right?
Do people yell that when they see you like walking around? Cliff! No,
it's funny. I got a couple friends in Miami who actually listen to your show a lot. And they tell me that y'all played that one rejoin where I messed up. Because I didn't hear with a question, and I was like, "Wait, was that to me?" And they're like, "Yo, they do that all the time down there." And I was like, "Oh man,
yeah, that was mine. Yeah. I made that one. That was mine.
That was a great one, man. That's a great one.
They yelled at you now, but I feel like today, in light of what's going on, Cliff, I'm sorry, man." Hey, it's Roy's fault for putting that promo together.
Whoa!
Honestly, it's the funniest thing in the world. I love it, man.
Thank you for being a good sport. I'm a jackass.
Jackass, man.
I appreciate it, man. On a serious note, and we'll kind of bounce around. Stanzik and I would really like to listen along with the audience, so I imagine this could and should probably take a life of its own, where the four of you are just kind of feeding off of each other. I have a story that I've shared with Roy that I'd like to share with you and the audience as well, just to kind of show you the differences between the experiences that I have as a white man living in the United States as opposed to what black people go through on a daily basis. And I will share that story with you guys in the audience.
Wait a minute, you're white?
Yes, I'm white, Chad. I'm the whitest person you know, Chad. Stanzik's a close second, by the way. I don't know, actually. Back.
Yeah, I'm pretty white.
Yeah.
I want to start with, listen, it's funny to say the last week. Share your emotions with what's transpired here over the last week, because certainly all of you have been dealing with this for a lot longer than just a week. But to kind of stay in the moment here for a minute, Roy, let's start with you. Give me the emotional roller coaster that has been the last week for you, what you've been feeling, what you've been thinking as the week has kind of moved on here.
Well, starting from the beginning when all this happened, my initial reaction was, oh no, here we go again, because this is another unarmed black man getting murdered by the police. So it's not that I'm numb to it. It's just, this just keeps happening. And then the protest starts and the police are firing tear gas and they're beating up the protesters. And basically what the protesters are protesting against, the police are doing right now against the protesters. But I noticed that everybody around the world has started walking with with, you know, our protesters. And now this is getting worldwide attention, which is rare to me. Like, normally this gets ignored, you know, and this usually does last a week. It looks like it's going to last a lot longer. Today, basically, in spite, I guess, the District of Columbia mayor decided to name the street, 16th Street, in front of the White House, Black Lives Matter Plaza. And I'm like, whoa, like some of the local politicians are now seeing what's going on right now and they are not with this. So that's good. And leading to an election in November, a election that is, who knows what's going to happen considering the pandemic and considering that people who might not want to go to polling places may have to vote by mail, you know, and probably the other party are going to try to avoid that happening. Like, that's pretty important, you know. Like, first of all, and I thought about this a lot, as far as police reform, you know, I mean, that's something that needs to be considered. I'm sure the federal government is probably going to let municipalities and states handle that. But I mean, really, somebody really needs to think about doing something like cutting funding the police precincts, or, you know, creating independent review panels, something that's going to help curb, you know, brutality, or at least keep the police in check. And I've been trying to figure out how we can curb this issue. And this is just one issue, mind you, one issue when it comes to systemic racism, which is over-policing of certain neighborhoods, you know, and all the other stuff. So my mind has been racing this entire week.
Sure.
And trying to figure out what exactly can we do to fix this, really.
Tarika, your emotions and feelings as the week has unfolded here.
Yeah, it's been a very interesting week. I was just saying to someone yesterday that throughout this entire quarantine that we've been in for like the last 2 or 3 months, I've heard so many people say, I feel like the days are running together. I feel like we're doing the same thing over and over. And I've always responded to that like, well, you know, for me, it doesn't really feel that way because I still get up and go to work every day. I still have something different going on every day. So it's not, I'm home, but it's not really the same day every day. And yet, since last week, it's literally felt like I've woken up to the same exact thing every single day. And I think what really made this time different was the fact that we didn't really get to process what just happened with Ahmaud Arbery before we had Breonna Taylor. And then we didn't get to process what happened with Breonna Taylor before we now have George Floyd. Like, the hashtags haven't even really trended yet before we're creating two more. And that is where so much frustration comes from a lot of people, from all of us. And a whole different issue, knowing that there are so many more, especially, you know, Black female victims who we don't even hear about the same way that we hear about the men, you know? And so it's just over the last week, trying to process this happening, not once, not twice, but 3 times, it's like, you've got to be kidding me. So for me, that was kind of like my initial stance, where it's just whatever. I think the next thing that came out of that was the shock that so many people had. And I didn't understand how people were shocked. It's not the first time you've heard of this. It's not the first time this has happened. And this is 2020. Camera phones weren't invented yesterday. This is something that has been happening and has been documented and has been shown well before now. So it just surprised me how many people were, this is really going on. I don't know if it was willful ignorance, but it was a point where I was like, you guys can't seriously still feel that this is new. And I think on the last part of my personal feelings was, how do I speak out about this without it coming to a point where my job is in question, where, you know, people who follow me and look at me as a mentor or look at me as a leader follows me on social media and says, you know, I can't believe she's saying this. But it got to a point where I was just like, you know what? I don't give a damn. This is just kind of how it is. This is kind of how I feel. And if I have to take a risk of being reprimanded of some sort or whatever for how I feel, I'm just going to be willing to take that, because I can't complain about people being complicit, and I can't complain, I'm sorry, about being complacent, and I can't complain about people being silent if I say to myself, I can't say anything because I don't want to be reprimanded at work. So I think those 3 things together, the timing, the inevitable shock, and then how do I express it in a way that doesn't jeopardize what I'm supposed to be looked at as, all those 3 things came together this week. And it's still hard to kind of decipher it, but that's just where we are.
Shannon?
This, just speaking frankly, this has been a very tough week. And I've been a bit overwhelmed, to be honest with you. And before I even get started, you know, thank you for allowing us this platform to discuss these things. You know, prior to today, you know, I had reached out, several people reached out to me to do interviews over the last week, and I've had to decline all of them because I couldn't properly articulate the feelings and the emotions that I was feeling. I don't know if this will come up later in the discussion. You know, we had a division-wide conference call yesterday, and that was really the first time that I spoke openly about how I was feeling, and I was overwhelmed. The best way that I can describe all of this, it's very heavy. and it's heavy, you know, seeing the imagery of, you know, George Floyd and what happened there, and seeing the peaceful protests and seeing how those are being handled, and following the coverage. And because, you know, we're, you know, a lot of us are still quarantined with Corona, you know, we're forced to see it, and it's heavy. It's a huge undertaking, all of it. And I got overwhelmed, and, you know, and watching these things, and my kids, I have a 14-year-old and a 10-year-old, and they were just as interested as I was. And my wife and I had tried to use this as a teaching moment for our kids, and going back and looking at other situations from the past, from the Emmett Tills to Rodney Kings. We had mentioned those in the past to them, but we didn't explicitly show them the videos. We showed them the Rodney King video and the LA riots and the fallout from that. We've had discussions about Emmett Till, but we still haven't shown them the imagery of his open casket because that's still a bit much. But all of these emotions, and as Tariq said, it's like, you know, people act like this is the first time it's happened. And like Roy said, you don't want to say you're numb to it, but in the kind of way you are, because you're not surprised. Because, you know, for every instance and situation that we've seen on camera, think about the thousands, the millions of those cases that we haven't seen. And so then you're left as a he said, she said, or he said, and with a member of the law enforcement. And obviously, popular opinion or whomever, they're going to take law enforcement side. So, you know, you think about all the injustices and the things that have happened, and, you know, people are using, you know, words like systemic racism and things like that. These are all true. And it's not an easy answer. And these conversations need to be had. There's not a one fix. But too often there are just quick band-aids. This can't be a band-aid like this. Like, it's been 400 years in the making that we've had our people with their knees on our throats and our necks, and we've been choking. And some people want to say, you know, get over it, pull up, you know, make your own way, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. But how can we, if we're already coming to the game with a minute left and we're already down by 10, and you expect us to win? Not to mention the other team has the ball. Like, and I'm not trying to make excuses, but I'm taking in all of this stuff, and it's just. It's heavy. Like, my emotions have gone from anger to sorrow to bewilderment at times. To, you know, I try not to get emotional. I'm gonna try not to get emotional on this call, but
it's okay if you get emotional, man.
But it's a lot, and you know, we'll discuss, you know, our roles and everything in this industry. But it's a lot, like Tariqa mentioned, and then you have to question, well, how honest can I be on these public forums with how I'm really feeling without fear that it's going to cost me my employment, or it could potentially cost me future employment? Like, these are all things. Like, we, as Black people, we've had to be trained since a young age to read the room. Like, you know, folks want to, you know, don't understand what white privilege is. White privilege is the ability to walk in a room and just go about your business. Whereas us Black people, we got to, you know, we're like Terminator. We got to scan the room and we got to read the room. And not only read the room, we got to be able to analyze and look at ourselves and how we're going to come across before we even enter that room, if we are fortunate enough to even enter that room. So it's the weight of all of this stuff, and it's all of this history and all of these cases and all of these instances of injustice upon us, and you're seeing it across the nation that it's bubbling and it's all coming to a head worldwide, and people are sick and tired of it. And one thing that stood out to me, you know, watching these protests, both peaceful and otherwise, is just, you know, you look at, you know, the big rallies and the protests and the marches that we had after Trayvon Martin and Mike Brown and things like that. Mm-hmm. And now you're seeing, you know, so many young people, one, and then you're seeing so many different ethnic groups, it's another, which is encouraging, regardless of what, you know, their underlying meaning may be or their motivation. But seeing so many young people united and standing up and saying enough is enough. Like if anything, that's been the most encouraging thing. And I just hope that the momentum from this continues. Like, it's raw and it's been a week, but what are the conversations going to be in 2 weeks? What are the conversations going to be in 6 months? What are the conversations going to be in a year? What are the conversations going to be in 5 years? And whether or not we will have the platform or be allowed to openly discuss these things is the question.
It seems like, and I want to hear from Cliff here in a second, that all three of you, there's a common theme here. We could hear the frustration and the emotion, but that you're shocked that people are shocked that this is still going on in 2020, which is flabbergasting even to me. Cliff, go ahead. Floor is yours.
So basically, I'm not just going to sum up the last week. I'm going to say about the last like month or so after the discovery of the Ahmaud Arbery video was actually delayed by like a month in itself. That actually happened in February, and I believe it came out in March or something like that. And then the two racist guys were arrested literally earlier in May, I believe. So it started with seeing that and witnessing that. It's like you hear things and you hear about things in the past, and it's just like that was so devastating right then and there. But like, the thing for me is I don't get devastated anymore. I just start getting angry now. So like that's my like approach to these things, right? Because like after a while, when you keep seeing the same thing and hearing the same thing over and over again, you're just going to start getting mad. Like you're going to stop feeling sad for yourself. You're just going to start getting angry and want to rebel back. And then on top of that, you have you start hearing about Breonna Taylor. And then I saw the Amy Cooper video the day before the George Floyd video. I'm just like, wow, this is a complete avalanche of just things just collapsing on the world, like all at once. Meanwhile, people are quarantined in their house, having to watch this 24/7 with the phones out all day, just scrolling through your phone all day. While I have to work in the morning time, I have to get up in the middle of the night, work in the morning time. And like my mind is already mentally drained as it is, just because like I'm up at such an odd time and I'm sleeping weird hours as it is. And I'm just watching videos back to back and seeing people talk about it over and over again. And then you have protesters, you got rioters, you have people in the streets, trying to get the attention to what's really going on here. And everyone keeps saying that's a distraction of the message. No, I say that's the result of a culmination of 400 plus years. And then you have all these events and you have people stuck in their house. You got people with no food, no education, no opportunity to do anything. What do you think is going to happen? They're going to find food and they're going to run through stores and then do whatever they got to do in order to eat, man. Like, I don't understand what people thought was going to happen when this whole entire thing went down. They probably thought it was just going to be another story, another hashtag we're going to get over in a week, and then that's going to be that. And then what truly pissed me off was what Drew Brees said and how dismissive and how not just dismissive, but how dangerous, honestly, be quite frankly, his comments were, because it was just so... It was so dismissive in the fact that, let me not make this about racial inequality. Let me make it about a flag and kneeling and all that. And I'm just like, I'm thinking to myself, this man had 4 years to understand what that story was. And he chose to talk about his grandparents and a flag and World War II and all that. I'm just like, this is not the issue at hand right now. No one is worried about the flag right now. We're worried about Black lives in America trying to be safe. Meanwhile, I worry about Tarika, Roy, and Shannon when they have to go out in the streets every single day as coworkers and colleagues. And you know, you never know if one day it could be them. I could see Shannon on the phone one day. He could be a hashtag. Like I could see Roy one day. He could be a hashtag. I could see Tarika. She could be Breonna Taylor again. Like it's mind boggling what's going on. But I'm not surprised. But at the same time, I turn that into anger more so than feeling sorry for everyone. Like I'm just angry at this point. That's how I feel.
Shannon, by the way, when you have to read a room, don't have Drew Brees do it for you. Okay.
He can read defenses better than he can read rooms.
I know Stanza got a question for you guys. Stanza, go ahead.
Yeah, it's not so much a question. It's just something that really clicked for me as a white person when I'm seeing all this and I'm trying to get a better grasp of it. And it's something that my sister put on Instagram, and it's, here's an example of how white privilege sounds. You keep saying it's horrible that an innocent Black man was killed, but destroying property has to stop. Try saying it's horrible that property is being destroyed, but killing innocent Black men has to stop. You're prioritizing the wrong part. Exactly. I think like if white people hear that, like that's what the Black people, that's what you guys are trying to tell us. That's the issue, is that you're focused on these looters and rioters. And of course, that's a very small percentage of the people that are protesting.
And don't forget a piece of cloth.
And you're nullifying the whole message. Yeah. 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 And Cliff, one other thing you said there, like, you know me, I run every day. I've never felt unsafe. There was a bear in the neighborhood this week. other than that, like, I run all the time. I've never felt, like, in danger of my life. The thought that I could go out for a run and the police would call my wife and say your husband was shot dead is insane to me. Like, I don't understand how that stuff is even happening, but it is. And, like, Roy, you mentioned how, like, you guys aren't getting numb to it. I think the problem is a lot of white people have never felt affected by it. It's just been background noise for so long that it hasn't even reached them. And there's a ton of white people. There's the majority of people, I would like to think, are against police brutality of black people. I would like to think. The problem, though, is that the majority of those white people aren't being vocal and aren't letting it be made known that they are against it and that they want it to change. And those are the people that we have to focus on, because there are going to be a small percentage of people that are racist and we aren't going to change them. But there are plenty of people like me and Stu Gotz who sympathize with what's going on in the black community, but aren't doing enough to actually fight for the change.
Well, there's a couple of things that you said in there that, if you don't mind, that I kind of want
to.
I don't know. So, point one, because, you know, I'm a little slow, so I had to write notes down as you were talking. I meant y'all.
You're not alone.
So, first thing, going back to Shannon talking about reading a room, it's so interesting that you would say that, because even in our department, and our department is great. Like, I think that we work with some of the best people in the world, some of the most talented people in the world, and I've never felt uncomfortable with the people who I work with day in, day out. But I would be a lie if I don't walk into a room and say to myself, is my blonde hair going to stick out as the only black woman here? I would be a lie to say that I don't say to myself, when I go in this office to have this conversation with this white woman or this white man, are they going to be an ally for me to, like, look out for me to really see, am I someone that they want to put in this position? Or are they having this conversation with me to say, like, oh, well, we spoke to Tarika. Or we talk to Tarika, you know, it's like, I don't want to feel like the Rooney Rule. You know what I mean? Like, you're only kind of appeasing me because I'm the only black woman in the room.
So check off the box, right?
Check off the box, yeah. Right? Like, oh, like, we talked to her. So, like, that's always something that we have to do. I always have to be mindful of how I present something in the packaging that I present that message, as to not come off as the angry black girl. And it's sad that you have to do that, but that's just what it is. You have no idea how insulting it is for someone to say to me, Tarika, you speak well. Well, what the hell am I supposed to sound like? Like, what did English change between the time you learned it and I learned it? Like, I don't understand what that even means. So it's little things like that, that truly, those unconscious biasness that people do and people say, that can really make the difference in your day-to-day interaction. People also need to understand the definition of the word diversity. Having five men in the room and one of them black, and then you say, well, we got a black guy, that's not diversity. Having five men in the room, one black guy, one woman, that's not diversity. You have not really explored the true effects of what different people are and where they come from and their experiences from that. So kind of expand your mind a little bit on that. And then the last thing is the situation of when you're seeing it happen and you know that it's happening, you have to also kind of put this filter of, what if it was someone I knew? What if it was my daughter that was in a room with her boyfriend or whoever, and someone decided to enact this no-knock rule and just bust in there and start firing? Like, what if that was my a race color? I don't know if you guys ever seen A Time to Kill. It's one of my favorite movies, right? With Matthew McConaughey and, and Samuel L. Jackson. And while they're giving his closing arguments, he gives this vivid picture of what happened to little Tanya. And at the end of it, he says, now imagine if she was white. And when he said that, the entire jury, you could see, like, there was one woman who was crying. It took that. It took you having to put yourself in that place for you to understand. And that's something that I think our white counterparts need to do. Put yourself in our shoes. Put yourself in our place. Imagine that it was someone you loved or someone you knew. Would you still feel that same outrage? And the final thing that I don't think that people get is, you can't compare what happens to you, or you can't compare what happens to when a white man, let me rephrase. Black-on-black crime is the one thing that I swear, if someone says it to me, I am literally probably going to use all the words that Danny will need to bleep out.
But what about Chicago? What about black-on-black crime in Chicago?
I'm not ready for that conversation.
Have you been to Overtown lately? Do you guys know? Guys, it's about proximity. Yeah. The common sense will tell you that majority of black areas, crimes committed there will be by black people. In white neighborhoods, crimes committed there, murders committed there, will 9 times out of 10 be by white people. It's proximity. But what happens in that situation? The guy is caught, he's charged, he's convicted, he's sentenced, he receives the justice that he deserves, and we move on. That doesn't happen with crimes of police brutality against black people. They still have not charged the officers who have murdered Breonna Taylor. They still have not done that. So you can't sit there and say to me, where is this outrage when this is happening in Chicago or when this is happening in Detroit, where I'm from, or where this is happening in Baltimore or whatever, because the outcome is not the same. The way that the victims are treated is not the same. The way that the aggressors are treated is not the same. So before you can truly understand where my oppression comes from, put yourself in my shoes, look at it realistically, and then think about how you can help and what you can do to move forward. But don't try to come and appease me. Don't ask me, what can you do if you truly have no intent on doing anything? Don't ask me, don't pretend like this is something brand new to you when I know Trayvon Martin happened years ago, when we know Emmett Till happened years ago. Don't talk to me about protests when Dr. Martin Luther King was assassinated and he lived his life based on peaceful protests. So we're not going to do that. You know what I mean? Like,
stop quoting MLK. Sorry, Teresa. Stop quoting MLK. Stop throwing MLK quotes in our faces.
That's all you learned in Black History class. Don't pull him out anymore. But I think the point that I'm making, it's just, you have to really stop looking at this situation from one lens and open up to understand there are different moving parts. It's not black and white. There are a lot of gray, and you kind of have to understand that gray in order to understand how we move forward to where we need to be.
Yeah, and the other thing about this, you're throwing out Chicago and throwing out black-on-black statistics. These are deflections. These are tactical distractions that are moving us away from the original point, which is an unarmed black man was murdered by the police in Minnesota. That a nurse was murdered with a no-knock warrant, was murdered in Louisville. You know, it's not helping. It's not helping the cause. It's not helping. All it's doing is deflecting from the original issue. And that's a real problem, because if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. And that's what this is. As you hear my daughter in the background.
But yeah, and what's just as dangerous too, like, aside from, you know, these big world events that you see on the news, it's stuff that's happening every day below the surface that doesn't get, you know, that's not on the news. Like, just when we talk about, you know, the systematic racism and the systems that are set up, and like you said, why aren't these cases prosecuted like other cases? Why don't you have the good cops why aren't they allowed to speak up? Because they're in fear that they're going to be some sort of repercussions. You know, why is it so common for us, the black males, especially, to be looked at as the aggressor or violent? It's because this stuff is taught at a young age, and it's so normal, and it's become the norm that we don't even think twice about it when it happens. You know, if without even looking, if you just see a news story pop up, you know, there was a murder in Chicago, you're going to assume, one, that the person who was murdered was black, and the person who was accused of murder was probably black as well. Like, that's like imagery. I'm big on imagery and what you see, and what, part of the reason why I even got into media and journalism in the first place, aside from just my overall love for sports, is because you look at the news, and I used to watch the news a lot when I was a kid, and growing up in New York, and 9 times out of 10, the imagery that you've seen on the news, it wasn't these positive stories of what black males are doing in the communities. It was, you know, violence and someone getting murdered and, you know, and Bed-Stuy or what have you. Like, and that's big for me. And I hope I'm not changing the subject going, of course, here, but I think it's big and why it's so important for people like us in this conversation to have our voices be heard and be the decision makers behind the scenes, so that we can project positive imagery, so that everything that's heard and accepted is not being one side and not coming from a white male's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not even getting into the larger issue, which I know Tarika deals with and she mentions all the time, is the things that happen and are said and what Black women are subjected to, and the fact that they're looked at as lesser. Like, don't give me the history about the women's movement. No, that was white women's movement. You know, like Black women they're still waiting on their Black women's movement because they're not getting the support from the majority. And just speaking frankly, they're not getting that same support from us Black males. But I'm not going on this, you know, blaming us, but it's a lot of factors. That's why conversations like these are so nuanced and why there's so many levels. And why it's no easy fix, because you're trying to correct, like, what can I do? Yeah, what can I do question? You're trying to answer something that's been in place for 400 plus years. Like, 1619 was a long time ago. Like, and like, for me, and living here in, you know, rural Connecticut, Farmington, Connecticut, and like, I was appalled. Like, part of the reason why we even moved here was because they had good education system. But we come to learn, and this is across the board, is that they only focus with Black history on these tentpole events. Like, they go from, like, slavery, Martin Luther King, Barack Obama. That's it. Like, that's the answer. And for a lot of these kids, their first introduction to Black history, if you want to even call it that, is slavery. So where do you expect them to go? What do you expect them to learn if their first imagery, aside from seeing Black men arrested or being the villains on these movies or Law and Orders or whatever, is seeing us in chains and shackles and being looked at as less than. It's a continual uphill battle.
We got to change that. And I've been telling people recently, like, with all the recent events going on, how people, when Roy mentioned the deflections and how people want to do the Chicago and the Black on Black crime, and they're not ready for that Chicago conversation, which is a city built on racism and segregation, but we're going to get to that a little bit later. But I keep telling people, there's no two sides to this anymore. The story is no longer going to be, oh, well, what about this or what about that? Or what could, you know, how could the situation have been approached differently to where his life hasn't ended? No, he was a victim of racism. He was targeted because of the structures that are in place in the United States today. He was targeted, and then he became a victim of police brutality, and his life is over because of the systematic racism that began 400 plus years ago. Like, we all know this. This is nothing new, and this is going to keep continuing over and over again.
Go ahead. Finish your thoughts.
In every single way and walk of life that I've been through, like, from, I'm talking from education to, you know, places I've lived to high school to, middle school, high school, college, whatever. Like, there's always been times where I felt uncomfortable due to race. Like, these things have been happening all of our life. I'm still in my 20s. I don't know. And you guys are in your early 30s. So y'all can speak on this with kids, by the way, too. So y'all can speak on this at a different level.
I'm
25.
Don't do that.
Oh, damn, Cliff. Don't do that.
My bad.
But
I
can, Cliff!
I can just speak on this as a level, just as someone who just walked through life, just, you know, just thinking for myself. And I couldn't even imagine what Roy feels for, you know, for Claire in his hands right now, and how worried he is with her. And like Shannon said, he got a, Shannon, 14, right?
14-year-old son with special needs and a 10-year-old daughter, 11-year-old daughter.
In the middle of Connecticut.
Yeah.
Probably, I think that town might be 5% Black, and that might be generous, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, generous. To me, like, that's terrifying. Like, I grew up in a town where it's probably, like, in an area where it's probably, it's like a split. It's probably about, like, 50-50. You still used to get, I used to just walk home from the park. Like, late at night, like, yo, what are you doing? I can't tell you how many times that happened. Now, thinking back on it, it's like, damn, like, one of those interactions could have been the end of my life. You know what I mean? Like, it's crazy when you reflect. And I don't want this for kids down the line that grew up in my area either. So we need to stop this now.
I'd like to stay here for just a second, because Roy on our radio show this past week talked about what it's like raising kids in America. And I can't relate, guys. I can't. I just Listen, I am from Sands Point, New York. I'm not going to apologize for any of it. My parents were very successful. They worked very hard. They're good people. I grew up in one of the wealthiest areas in the United States, and I live in a gated community on a golf course, right? So the experience my kids are having are not the experience you and your kids are having. And when Roy spoke, it wasn't the first time I thought about it, but it really started getting me to think a lot more about it since I think Roy spoke on Monday about what it would be like to have that conversation with my children. How do you have to act when you leave the house? And so I think the good place for us to kind of stay, because you guys do have children. And so, Tariq, I would ask you, for someone who can't relate to having to have that conversation, I can walk out the house, do whatever the hell they want. What conversations are you having with your children?
Totally different for me. I have a 13-year-old daughter, and it is interesting. And I say that because the things that a normal child should experience, I have to always give a disclaimer for. I'll give you an example of that. If we're in the mall, my rule is if you can't afford it, don't touch it. If you don't have money in your pocket, don't touch it. And it's not because I don't want her to go and look at nicer things or whatever, but it's because while other children are browsing, maybe they want to try on the shirt, maybe they want to try on the bracelet, my child is stealing. And that's just how it is. So in order to avoid getting the stereotype or making the assumption that you could possibly be stealing, because of course, what would a young, you know, what would a young black girl be doing in a Louis Vuitton store? Like, well, her mom can afford Louis Vuitton. You know what I mean? So that's why we're here. However, she doesn't understand that that's what people think of her at that moment. So I just have to bring the rule. Hey, when we go in the store, if you're not buying it, don't touch it. And she knows that. And that's been something that I have had to instill in her since she was 9 and she's 13. So now 4 years later, it's clockwork. She knows that. She understands that. She used to walk, my daughter has to walk back and forth from the bus station, from the bus stop here to the house whenever, you know, when school was in session. And I had to have a conversation with her. And this was most recently when Netflix released the When They See Us video. Because as we saw in that docuseries, you don't even have to be guilty of something in order to be arrested and charged and serve some form of time for something that you've done. And so I say to her, if an officer talks to you, if someone comes up to you, you say absolutely nothing. You're a minor. You don't have your parent present. You say absolutely nothing. I don't care how scared you are. You hold it. You keep it in. You do whatever you have to do. But you be silent and you call me or you call your father. These are the conversations that we have to have. I have to go above and beyond with her about certain things because where we used to or where some will say, well, it's harder for black men. No, Sandra Bland shows you that it's not just black men that this is happening to. This is happening to black women as well. So I'm one of the ones that are constantly saying to her, you know, be aware of these things. Be mindful of how something happens. Know when to, you know, to tell an adult. Know when to call me, to talk to me. Know when to be careful. Understand that you can't just go out and do the same things that your white friends do. It's just, that's just kind of how it is. And it's sad that we have to have those kinds of conversations, but it's true and it's real. I have to go above and beyond what they're teaching you in school because they're limiting your knowledge of your history and what people are doing for you and have done to get you where you are. I mean, I'm from Detroit, right? I grew up on East 7 Mile, super hood. However, I had two parents, older parents, they were retired. I didn't want for anything. I have 2 college degrees. I didn't want for anything. But I'm also not a product of my environment because it could have turned out different. So it's a combination of us trying to ensure that they understand things don't have to be the way they see them, but you have to be mindful.
And Shannon, I want to get your thoughts on what Tariqa just said. People need to understand, white people in our audience need to understand, you have the A, you don't have to have that conversation with your kids. B, Tariqa has had that conversation with the kids. Your kid could go out and do exactly what it is you have told them to do, and it still might not be enough. And that is just insanity to me. Shannon, go ahead.
One of the challenges that my wife and I have experienced is with our kids, and they've been two totally different situations. I'll start with my son first because he's older. My son, because he's not as aware of his surroundings. He's a very personable kid, very a lot of energy, you know, very loud at times. And we found ourselves, especially when we're out in public, having to try to stifle some of his youthful exuberance because of what the perception of him being a loud black man and how people can be offended and threatened by that. And now he's at the age, like I said, he's 14, starting to get facial hair. And he went from, you know, he went from, you know, this cute kid or whatever, nice looking kid, to now he's a threat. You know, his voice is getting a little deeper now, and now he's a threat. When, if you know him, he doesn't have one threatening, malicious bone in his body. I know people say, but if you know my son, like, that's who he is. He's always smiling. He's always speaking to people. But at the same time, we had the conversations. Granted, he can't process as much, but just trying to be mindful and aware. That's still a struggle that we have, and that's part of the fear that we have with him in public and around people that don't know him because of how he may come off or how he might be loud. We had a family and here in our neighborhood where we live, and I'm sure the parents were upset because it got out. But one little girl told my daughter, "Hey, I can't come outside when your brother's outside because he's too busy and I might get hurt." And that's what she was told by her parents. And of course, her parents tried to deny it. But there's no reason why this girl would lie to my daughter as to why she can't play with her anymore because of fear of other. So, you know, so that's a fear that we have on my dirt. It's totally different because my daughter, like she's an overachiever. You know, if she's going to do something, she's going to strive to be the best. And we always want to give her the confidence to do so. You know, whether she was, you know, she was placing national when she did competitive dance, or when she was playing violin strings, or playing her brass instrument now, or acting, or on the Big Fib or Disney Plus right now. Like we always try to instill confidence in her to be the best, but at the same time, you want to make sure that don't be ashamed of your. Or don't block your blessings because someone else intimidated or these white kids are intimidated with your greatness. Don't stifle yourself. Don't quiet yourself because of how they feel. You have a voice, you have an opinion, and you have to stand up for it. And I think because my daughter is her brother's biggest protector. And because of how vulnerable that he is, like she goes above and beyond, mindful of people that are atypical, whether that's, you know, their mental makeup, whether that's how their race, their age, whatever the mind you. So she's going to be that advocate for people. She's the voice of the voiceless. And we never want her to stop being, but I have noticed, and it might come with ages, but she just turned 11, is that being here now in Farmington for 3 years, she questions whether or not she should pull herself closer to the pack just to fit in. You know, we've noticed that from her style of dress to her hair, because she got tired of the kids asking her, "Why is your hair so wild?" or them putting their hands in her hair and feeling the texture of her hair, or her getting braids put in and the kids asking how her hair was able to grow so long in the course of a weekend. She got tired of answering these questions. So she starts, you know, wanting more like these other girls with the things in I think it's a VSCO girl or some terminology that's used now with these girls. Like trying to fit in. And yes, I get it. Making friends is great and all of that stuff. And that's great, but you can't stop being you on the account of them. We want you to speak up. We want you to be better than the best because you've always been. And that's the expectation for you. We're not allowed the same pitfall. We don't have the same average. Our average, your average, our average as black folks is not the same as the average for white folks. The ceiling may be the roof in the eyes of Michael Jordan, but the floor is totally different. Our floor is the basement. We can't be average because our average in a lot of people's minds is below average. And so in addition to, you know, her, you know, putting that confidence in her because she doesn't see too many girls that look like her. When we first moved to Farmington, she was the only black girl in her grade at her school that had an African-American mother and father. The only one. So who does she go to talk to in her, or what groups or what social groups does she go in her school or at her school that might have a common interest as her. She didn't have any. So she tries her best to try to fit in, but it's not the same old as these other girls. My daughter, like I said, was a competitive dancer, placed nationally in several competitions. She's on point as in ballet, but she goes through those same struggles. As a matter of fact, my wife and my daughter participated in a video in it series on mom.com in which they discussed the hardships growing up and being the only Black ballerina a lot of times in her class and or her dance studio. And trying to find a leotard that matched your skin tone, or trying to find tights that matched your skin tone, or more importantly, trying to find point shoes that match your skin tone. Because guess what? There aren't any. So matter of fact, my wife and my wife hosted a party where she had some other Black ballerinas, and actually had a party in which they dyed their point shoes brown. And there's a hashtag that on social media called Black Girls Do Ballet, because you don't see that imagery. And so getting back to this web series, so they had an interview series with my wife and my daughter where they had a really frank conversation about some of the trials and tribulations that they go to. And it, apparently it was very successful, and it hit home with a lot of people because the series actually won a Webby, which is like the internet Emmys. They actually won an Emmy for their for their conversation. So how do I try to tell a girl who's excelled at everything she does that you have to stifle yourself and try to fit in with some other folks? You can't do it. We can't allow it. And not just for you, but you have to continue to march on and be better than the best for the Black girls who didn't have a voice like you or couldn't get to this level, although they might've been just as talented because they didn't have someone in their corner pushing you, or they didn't have the opportunities that you had. And just as important, you have to continue to be a trailblazer for those Black girls that see you after. You know, so that goes from not just what you do, but the imagery that you portray on social media. She has an Instagram page. She has TikTok. She's doing all the dances, all that regular stuff. That's all well and good. And we want to see you doing that. But at the same time, the imagery that you've shown, I want them to see you doing so many different things. And that's big for us. And I know I'm going on a rant here.
That's right, man.
But it's key. And maybe I'm a softy because I'm a girl dad. And shout out to L. Duncan for the hashtag. But that's what it is, and that's part of the challenges. And you know, for someone like Roy, and I'll toss it to you, Roy, who has a younger daughter, these are some of the things that he has to prepare his daughter for already.
Oh yeah, I mean, I am proud of her as she moves her little chair across the room, making a lot of noise. Hey,
yell at her, man.
I'm sorry. Yeah,
Princess Claire.
She is so intelligent. She is so smart, and she knows what she wants. I just gave her like a little Lunchable, like some Ritz crackers or whatever. She wanted that. Like she was crying her head off trying to get me to do that. And so I'm wondering, as far as education is concerned, when I have to put her in school, what is she going to learn along with her classmates? Like Tarika said, the education on Black history is terrible. It's terrible. Like I said on Twitter that absolutely there's no excuse why you have to find out about the Tulsa Massacre through a comic book series on HBO and not your school. Education just is lackluster on Black history and just lackluster in general. Like our education system is terrible. And racism is a learned behavior. So, you know, you got these little kids watching their parents, you know, say these things and do these things, and it's imparting on their children, and they're going to act that way towards, you know, the other children in the class. And I'm worried about that too.
Can I cut you off real quick, Roy? And I don't mean to cut you off, but there's a very interesting situation that happened here with us a couple nights ago, speaking of that same thing. And this is bigger than, like, this is not just, you know, your political party or whatever. Like, that's all well and good. But my daughter had a classmate, a girl literally in her class or whatever. You know, all these kids follow each other on social media, TikTok, whatever. So my daughter came to us a couple nights ago and said that this particular classmate, who my daughter can already feel that she's shady at times towards her or whatever. But, you know, we try to be, you know, when they go low, we go high. We try to always be the better person, the bigger person or whatever. But this girl a couple nights ago changed her TikTok image or whatever, her profile picture to all Lives Matter with the Republican sign and MAGA written underneath. Like, you know, forget the Republican and Democrat side of it. We already know that you're saying all lives matter is directly being contrarian to Black Lives Matter. So we already know that. And so that's aside from, you know, your parents' political beliefs, you're doing that to be anti-Black Lives Matter. And I was high, and it was funny. This situation rings out for me because it was a role reversal between my wife and I, because typically I'm usually the level-minded Virgo, and she's the Pisces, very emotional and takes everything to heart. And saw this post, I automatically told my daughter to block this girl. Like, you know, she's already been shady to you in the past. Go ahead and block her. And then my wife agreed with it, but then she was like, no, you know what? She should unblock her, because, and here was the reason why that really stuck out, because if you block this girl and say you might post something and the other kids in your class may see, they might say to this girl, did you see what Shannon did? And the girl may look to find out that she was blocked. That within itself will then create an uncomfortable situation environment for my daughter when they do return to school or whatever their social circles that they might have. So I had to, as myself, I had to swallow my pride and agree to unblock this girl. She didn't follow her. She didn't friend her, but to unblock her because of fear of later repercussions for my daughter in these social circles. So that within itself was just shows you the layers that we have to deal with, where we can't, and we're justified for her blocking her, but fear that it's going to negatively affect daughter when she has to reassimilate in these classrooms with these kids.
It sounds like, and Cliff, you grew up in Philadelphia, so I'm assuming that your parents had these conversations with you, but it sounds like the four of you are frustrated, almost disbelief that you still have, in 2020, you still have to have the conversation with your kids, and in all likelihood, your kids will have to have it with their kids, and that, which means it still seems like we're so far away from getting to where we want to get. Which is frustrating, I would imagine, for all Black people. It seems like you four are all frustrated. But Cliff, growing up in Philadelphia, your parents were having these conversations with you?
It's funny, because my parents are actually immigrants. They're from Haiti, and they moved here, my mom moved here, like, early 80s-ish, and my dad came over, like, the middle of the late 80s-ish. But they're still very connected to their Haitian roots. They aren't really, like, Americanized now. Like, my mom and dad don't even know how to text. Like, that's how little they've transferred their life over as Americans. But my mom used to just tell me, like, flat out, like, don't do this or don't do that. She never really, like, explained why you really shouldn't do certain things. She was just like, yo, don't go over here or don't go to this neighborhood or don't, you know, maybe sometimes you should probably watch the way you dress, and sometimes you should probably watch the way you talk to certain people. Cause like growing up, I had a problem with like having like somewhat of a filter, I guess, so to speak, and more so just saying things just to people, just saying, you know, how I felt or whatever. But yeah, it was more so just like, yo, yeah, like watch what they're doing to these young Black men here in these streets, pretty much. And you got to be careful and you got to watch out what you're doing. It was never a super in-depth conversation about what racism truly, truly was. And that goes back to Rory's point about education, about racism in this country. Like, I didn't get a real racism education until I got to college, and I was doing African-American studies classes to get the minor. And when I had a class, my first African-American studies class, I probably learned more about like race relations in America in that class than I did my entire upbringing of middle, elementary, or high school. Like that's how that's how poor the education is on Black history. It's crazy. And I went to pretty decent schools too. Like, you know, I went to a private elementary school. Like, I went to a Blue Ribbon high school, and like, I was just dumbfounded by like the lack of knowledge I knew on like actual, you know, systematic racism until I got to that class in college and started taking more of them. So yeah, like the knowledge of racism is bad for us as Black people, but it shows like what they're teaching, you know, white people as well. Like, right. They're not teaching anyone anything. Yeah. Therefore, no one can learn anything. That's a real big issue.
I think it's important that white people share their experience, just to point out how different it is. And I want to share two stories with you guys and share it with our audience. Okay. You guys are talking about growing up, your kids growing up. I had a friend growing up who got pulled over by a cop, a white friend of mine, pulled over by a cop, was drunk, had too many drinks. Imagine if that happened to any of the four of you, right, or your children, what the reaction would be to the cop. The cop, now I'm about, I don't know, 18, 19 years old at the time. The cop offered, hey, Rob, that was my friend's name, get out of the car, leave your car on the side of the road. I'll drive you home. Come back, have your parents drive you, get the car tomorrow. That's not like a world any of you are living in?
No.
Absolutely.
Can you believe that?
I was at a party one night, and everybody else was, I was like 17 at the time. Everybody else was drinking. A couple kids got busted for underages or whatever. They actually called my parents out of everyone's parents and then let kids that were actually drunk walk home and no notification to their parents or nothing. They just walked home with citations. I wasn't drunk, nothing. I blew a zero. They still called my mom up. Like that's the craziest part. Yeah. Yeah. Like it's wild. It's wild. The differences, man. Like,
never. And
I'm never blown away by it. I'm just disappointed by it. You know what I mean? And it angers me at the end of the day.
They talk about driving your friend home. They would have drove my black ass to jail.
Right. Now Roy knows the next story I'm going to tell because I've told it on the air before. And I just want to share it with you guys in the audience to get your reaction to it, but also point out the differences. Like, we're living in two different worlds here. Okay. Where I'm in Pennsylvania with my children. I have twin girls who are now 16, but at the time, I think they were 5 or 6 years old. So they were really young, like still in car seats young. And we were headed to Hershey Park, and it was a driving rainstorm in Pennsylvania. And we got pulled over, state trooper, Pennsylvania. And he asked me to – now he sees that there are two children in the back, and he sees my wife is in the front. And I was simply speeding. I don't think I was doing anything else. Pulled me over, asked me to get out of the car and walk to the back of the car with him, which I found to be, you know, hey, it's a speeding violation. Give me my ticket. Let me move on with my day. So I found it to be odd that he asked me to get out of my car and walk to the back of the car, which doesn't sound odd to any of the four of you, but it was odd to me. So I walked to the back of the car, and he asks me point blank, do you have drugs and machine guns in your trunk? Yes.
But that's the type of rhetoric that they'd be asking you.
Hold on.
That's happened to me last summer.
Well, Tarika, before I tell you how I responded, Tarika, how would you respond to that question? If a cop did exactly what I just said to you, how would you respond to that question?
Well, if I had gotten that far to even have had a conversation first of all, quite honestly, if I didn't, I would say no. But the difference is they probably wouldn't believe me because I literally just had this exact same situation happen. The exact same situation happened to me last summer where you may say no when you conclude your story. I instead had dogs sniffing around my car because he didn't believe me.
All right, Shannon, what do you imagine? How would that go down? How would that go down for you, man? I'll get to the end of my story, but how do you imagine?
Like similar to what Tarika said, regardless of what our answer would have been, they still would have checked or try to get probable cause on checking the car. So if they would have asked, it was just more of a, you know, part of the SOP, but they still would have looked anyway.
But you guys, you're being like your response to the officers, Roy, your response to that officer is no, sir. Is it, you're not being a wise ass, is what I'm trying to say, right?
Right. Right.
No.
So the officer asked me, I gave him a look. I rolled my eyes. I said, are you a moron?
Oh, no. No.
And he said, excuse me. I said, I'm from Florida. I'm on vacation with my family. I have my twin daughters in the back of my car. My wife's in the front. And you think I have drugs and machine guns in the back? I said, yes, sir. I have a full artillery of guns and a whole bunch of crack in my trunk. Feel free. Open it up. Check it out. And I called a state trooper a moron, okay? And my wife's yelling at me. What are you doing? Calm down. And I'm like, no, I will not calm down. I will tell you this. I did it. I never once felt threatened. I never once felt like I didn't have confidence and control of the situation. We spoke for a little bit longer. I think I called him a jackass on top of calling him a moron. He wrote me a bunch of speeding tickets. I got my car. We drove away. Yeah. A couple of minutes later, Roy, you know this. I told this on the air. A couple of minutes later, I turned to my wife. My wife said, what are you thinking? I said, I never think. So I was just, I don't have to. I just react. You guys can't do that. But I did say to my wife, Abby, if I was black, I'd either be dead or in prison, and so would you.
Yep.
And that similar situation literally happened to me last summer where my husband and I were coming from Georgia. We rented a car, and I'll make this story super quick. We rented a car in North Carolina. We used to live in North Carolina, is where we met, and we decided to drive from North Carolina to Georgia. Rental car. Coming back from Georgia, we're on I-20 in South Carolina. State trooper pulls us over. Says we didn't turn on the turning signal or whatever when we're merging. Cool. You know, my husband says, I think I did, but if I didn't, all right, fine. We'll take the ticket. Somehow, because he's from Pennsylvania, and so he has an out-of-state license. I'm from Michigan. I have an out-of-state license. The car is a rental car. Most rental cars have some weird random-ass plates. I think the plate was like North. I don't even know what the plate. I think like Maryland or something like that. But it was just weird. So now all of a sudden, we've become two people with two out-of-state licenses and a car that has an out-of-state plate, even though we have the rental paperwork. And he asked my husband, who's this chick in the side of the car with you? He says, that's my wife. He comes and asks me the exact same question. How do you know this guy? As if we just made the shit up. It's like, this is my husband. Another trooper comes behind. He comes back and says to my husband, I think you guys are drug traffickers, and I want to search the car.
Ooh,
and my husband, of course, being a 6'5", 215 black man, is like, sir, I don't know what reason you would feel to need to do that. Me, I'm the militant one. Don't let this man come over here and ask me, can he search my car? Because I'm going to tell him, hell no, he can't search my car. And of course, he comes over because he says, you got to talk to my wife. And he comes over and he says, ma'am, I want to search the vehicle. And I said, sir, you have no reason whatsoever to search my vehicle. And as I'm getting ready to pull full, like I'm going full, I know my rights, run down the whole Constitution on his ass, right? But I look at my husband's face and his face said to me, if you say one thing, they're taking me to jail. If you say one thing wrong, this is going to end wrong. And I, beside what I really wanted to do, I shut up. I said, fine. And I let him bring a dog to search my car. I've got books all in the back of my car. I went to a book fair. I've got books all in the back of the car. You can see the books. And he has a dog on the side of the highway searching and sniffing for drugs in my car. I'd never been so humiliated in my, of all the things that I've been called in my life, I'd never been called a drug trafficker. So now I got something cool to put on my resume next time, you know. I'm clearly out here moving drugs on I-20.
Well, let's think about that. So, like, Cliff, think about this. Tarika, my experience is I'm emboldened. I never feel threatened. I'm calling you a moron and a jackass. Tarika is biting her lip and allowing the cop to do whatever it is that the cop wants to do. And as I'm speaking it, and as I'm saying it out loud, holy shit, is that unfair, Cliff?
Yeah. No, that's facts. And like I said, luckily, I mean, I've had a couple of run-ins with police too. Like I said, just either driving or just getting pulled over and stuff like that. And I think one time I actually searched my car when I was even driving. I was outside of a friend's house, and they had brought the dogs on. So I'm like, what's going on here? What are you doing? He was like, yeah, we had some suspicious activities out here. You seeing people coming in and out of this area. I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm in my friend's house right there. And he's like, yeah, well, we got to search your car. I'm like, no. He's like, well, you did the whole warrant thing. And I'm just like, all right, go ahead. Yo, you got it. And then, whole time, like obviously knowing there's nothing in the car, I'm just like, hey, you find, you know, just trying to be a little wiser. Like, yo, you find anything? Like, what you got? What'd you come up with? And then they're just, you know, doing the dogs. They're in and out. They're looking. They're looking. Thinking back on it, I think I was 19 at the time. So thinking back on it, that probably wasn't like the best choice to, you know, really be smart in that moment. Especially because it was like nighttime too. But I, like, at a certain point, like, you just get so fed up with the bullshit that you just, you just let it go. Like you just speak, you just speak on it. Like you don't succumb to completely, you don't completely succumb to their orders. Like you start getting disrespectful.
Like you get tired of having to, you get tired. Yeah. You get tired of trying to have to prove your innocence. You know, like you already assumed that you're guilty before you even did anything. And that also speaks to, like, you know, we believe like you're a suspect already. Like you're suspicious for nothing, for not even doing anything.
For nothing.
You can just be standing there leaning up against the car, whatever.
We used to play basketball at this one park from every summer night. This is like a probably like a 10-15 minute walk from my house, and then like all the kids in our neighborhood, we would, you know, one by one, we go back to our houses as we walk back from the park. It's like maybe about, you know, 5-6 of us every like clockwork every other night or once a week or something like that. Like, we'll come over, you know, hey, you guys got anything in your pockets, anything going on? We've been hearing about some break-ins in the neighborhood, this and that. It's just, it's crazy, man. And then like, it would, like, it'd be white kids with us too, and they'd be like, they would look at it and be like, all right, like, this is annoying too, you know what I mean? Because like, if they'd be with us and then they would see like what was going on, and at the time, like, you don't really even fully grasp it, because like, you're just like, okay, maybe this is just some routine, you know, stupid stop or whatever like that. Cause like, obviously at a younger age, you don't get it yet. But like, as you get older, you just looking back, like, damn, like that interaction could have went 100 different ways. And they're asking me, do I got machine guns in my pockets? Like, bro, I just came back from playing basketball. I got Gatorade on my shirt. What are you talking about?
And here's the other thing. Here's the other thing too. People need to stop calling the cops on black people for no apparent reason.
That's why that Amy Cooper video, man.
Yeah, that Amy. Yeah, that obviously. Yeah, that's been a scourge lately. You know, like one time, I drove to my friend's house in Hollywood. It's a nice neighborhood, you know, basically old white people. I have a couple of friends that live on the same block. I parked my car at one house and I walked to my other friend's house, and I got the cops called on me for just walking. Right? I was lucky enough to get in my friend's house before the cops came, because I didn't have to go to the door. He didn't accost me outside. My friend answered the door, who was white, and he talked to the cop. It's like, oh, that was my friend. My friend's here inside the house right now. He's fine. He's good. And luckily, the cop walked away. He could have easily asked me to step outside, and then he would have questioned me. That could have turned out wrong, all because somebody who might not know somebody in the neighborhood called the cops on somebody. That's an easy way to get somebody killed. Easy.
And to know that status doesn't matter, right? Like, you're a pretty popular guy, too, guys. People will know who you are, you know, or at least recognize your voice. For us, status doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what your profession is. It doesn't matter, you know, what you do for a living. I mean, even on our way up to ESPN, I've been pulled over plenty of times and have my ESPN badge displaying, which is a pretty prominent job in Bristol. I mean, you tell somebody in Bristol you work at ESPN, they're like, oh, that's pretty good. It doesn't matter. You know, my husband's a chef. He's a sous chef. And he pulled over to help me change a tire. And we thought, in West Hartford, we thought the cops were pulling over to help us to see what we were doing, to see if we needed anything. At least that was how it appeared when we first pulled over. But it instantly went from, you know, what's going on? Are you guys okay? So what are you guys doing in this area? So what are you guys doing in this neighborhood? You know, my husband's a chef. He works across the street. That's what we're doing in this neighborhood. Not that you needed to know, but it's like, status doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I remember Stephen A. Smith talking about once he was in Michigan going to the Palace in Auburn Hills and got pulled over for speeding. And it's like, you don't know Stephen A. Smith? I mean, he's got one of the biggest mouths ever. You don't know that? Status absolutely does not matter. And I know that's something that you and Dan don't have to deal with. You don't hear a siren and instantly think, I wonder, is this guy pulling over for me? You know, you don't do that.
I just told you, I get pulled over, I call him a jackass, and I get away with it. That's what infuriates you. And it should infuriate you.
Let me ask you guys, do you guys know or understand the term white privilege? You guys, I'm not saying sarcastic, seriously, do you understand?
Yeah, I understand. I feel like I understand.
What is white privilege to you guys?
You just did it.
Yeah. White privilege is me being able to call a cop a jackass and get away with it and go on my merry way. Right?
I would say that there are
so many. I'd like to know.
there are so many levels of white privilege that I guarantee you Stugatz and I aren't even aware of. Right. Guarantee you that.
Yeah.
I know,
you know our entire lives have been white privilege and we don't even know about it.
But I'd like to hear, like, Shannon, go ahead, like, please, because part of this is educating us. Please.
You know what white privilege is? White privilege is freedom. The freedom to go and come and do and act and be with the freedom to be yourselves without fear, thought, or considering the repercussions. It's just doing and being. And guess what? We don't have that privilege as black folks.
And you just want 100%. That
privilege. My privilege is also applying for a job and not having to take the K and the A off of your name so that people don't instantly read your resume and assume this is a black woman applying for this job. Yeah. Like, that's privilege, you know? White privilege is not having to wonder, if I wear something, will it be looked at as inappropriate in this boardroom or in this whatever, because everybody else can just kind of freely be who they are and be themselves, you know? It's waking up in the morning and just literally doing you, and that's it.
Worry-free, right? Without worry about ramifications or repercussions. Yep. Keep going down this path, guys, because this is fascinating to me. Yeah. Give a lot. Otherwise, I have a couple other things.
You talk about
the things that you guys can do as far as being allies.
No, these are things I never have to think of, Tarika. So thank you. Like, I've never even thought about the spelling of my name, ever.
My privilege.
One of the things you can definitely do with allies is have that same conversation with your kids. And what I mean by that is it doesn't have to be the same exact conversation as far as knowing, you know, what to look out for, but more so on the side of, hey, listen, if you hear someone of your classmates or if you hear somebody saying something inappropriate, insensitive, don't be afraid to say, hey, don't say those things or don't talk about those things. Like, it's okay, you know, for our white counterparts to teach their kids, you have to speak up when you hear these injustices, because just not having the conversation at all, they will also become complacent and they will also not really think about how it's affecting the people that they're with. And that's one of the things we have to kind of preach to everybody now, which I mean, I would think that would be common sense, but to some people it's not, because, and it's not consciously that they're doing it. It's just, it never affected me. So I never had a reason to, but now that it's affecting everyone globally, those are the conversations that you have to have. Your daughters are 16. I'm pretty sure they're going to be out in different circles. And you think that you've raised your kids the right way, that they'll do the right things and they'll say the right things. But sometimes we just want to ensure that they know so that it's verbally present. So there's nothing wrong with saying, hey, listen, there's a lot of insensitivity in the world right now. And I know that you girls are not that kind of way. I know that you aren't that kind. You don't think that way. If you've got friends doing this, hearing this, seeing this, say something, stand up. Don't let this proceed any longer in your presence. And I think that goes a long way with countering those parents who are teaching their kids the opposite, that all lives matter, that, you know, we can do and say these things and how past issues can resurface themselves. We just have to, that's how you start.
Yep. And not just the kids, like your friends too, the people that you hang amongst every single day. Like, you never, I'm sure y'all probably, Dennis and guys, I'm sure y'all probably got some friends that may think a certain way that, you know, obviously is the opposite of your opinion. And not only that, especially in a workplace, like bosses, coworkers, like, language is so important in how you talk to people in these spaces, right? Like, Tarika, like you said time and time again, you've been afraid sometimes to say certain things because you're afraid of the repercussions of it. Sometimes you just can't give a shit. You know what I mean? Cause like, you're just so fed up with just trying to, with not being yourself, that you just, yourself comes out, and then you're fed up with like how people are talking to you and how people are treating you in the workplace. Now, me personally, Stanzik knows this. Like,
I was going to say, if you didn't, Cliff.
Yeah, we definitely, before we really got to know each other, we definitely butted heads a couple times. But at the end of the day, like, that's the dialogue is what help us become real cool now. You know what I mean? Like, we talk and text each other, even though we don't work with each other every single day. We talk and text fairly often. I saw his wedding pics. So I didn't get the invite, but that's for another day.
Cliff, just so you know, I didn't get one either. Okay?
That's crazy, right? Nobody got the invite, man. But
pandemic, man.
But we had. I mean,
I should have said I got one. And Stanzik is racist. That's what I'm saying.
Exactly. But the dialogue is important, especially in the workplace. And on top of that, in the workplace where majority of them bosses, you know, don't look like us. Like, honestly, none of them, you know, quite frankly, don't look like you. So you gotta be an ally in situations like that, because opportunity for Black Americans in America is super important, super important, super important.
I want to, I think perhaps we can end on this note, but I would like to invite you guys. I want to do this more often with the four of you, if you guys are amenable to doing that and want to do that, because I think if it stops this week, then it's pointless in just doing it one time. So I'd like to have you guys on a lot more frequently to do exactly what it is we're doing now. You sharing your experiences and us listening and contributing where and when we can. Bomani said something interesting on our show to me, and I'm wondering how all four of you feel about it. He started off the week Monday saying he noticed at least for that moment, a shift where there was unity, where white people were at least starting to understand. He felt hope, essentially, is what he was trying to say. And he said, I hope I still feel it days from now, weeks from now, months from now, but I'm not sure that I will. We had him on a few days later, and he said he felt more hopeful than he did a couple of days ago, but he hopes that it continues into next week, next month, next year. Roy, I'll start with you. Do you feel the same way Bomani does, and I'm certain you have doubts that it will continue as we move forward, but do you feel the way Bomani has felt, where there's actual hope?
Well, obviously I have doubts. Because you still have people in power, you know, you still have old people in power, you know, so you gotta vote. That's the most important thing, by the way, this year. You gotta vote, because a lot of these people need to get out of office, because they have no intention of changing a goddamn thing. And the other thing is,
you're talking to white people too, Roy, not just black people. Black people, white people gotta vote, man.
Yeah, I'm talking to white people. I'm talking to Hispanics, Asians. I'm talking Swedes. Like, even though they're not, you know, Sweden or whatever, they came over. Anyway, yeah, I do have my doubts, but I do have hope.
No, because I think at certain levels, Roy, now more so than ever, both white and black people are just tired of it, whatever it's been the last few years. You know?
Yeah, and Dan said it perfectly. Like, these cops are being pretty indiscriminate as far as kicking the shit out of people. Like, you know, white people are getting beat up too.
And equal opportunity ass whoopings.
Equal opportunity ass whoopings. So, yeah. And I do have hope, because, again, people all over the world are walking with us now. Like, it seems like all cries for help are being heard. Now it's a beacon.
Right.
So that's very important.
They're also, and listen, and to everyone's credit, they're being held accountable. They are saying things that moments later they are having to apologize for. They are apologizing for things they said years ago, which is amazing.
Well, they're apologizing because
they have to.
But
saving face.
They have to.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly.
Right. But listen, it's at least they have to watch what they say, right? You talked about checks and balances within the police system, Roy, and now there are checks and balances as to what it is you say. You can't just say Florida State coach. I sent that an individual text to every kid on the team anymore. Can't do it. You're going to be called out by a kid that you recruited that you're giving a free education to. You can't do it anymore. So at least to me, now I could be wrong, I think that's where Bomani was headed, is that's a little bit of progress right there, where he feels, I think it was Marvin Wilson, feels emboldened to be able to call out his coach like that. Tarika, do you feel what Bomani's been feeling the last week?
Yeah, I started to feel hopeful that we were coming together in unity even before this started most recently. And that was when the coronavirus hit, right? Because for a brief moment, as devastating as that had been, it wasn't about race, right? The coronavirus was killing everybody. Black, white, kid, young, old, it didn't matter. So for a moment, it felt like, we know what we can do when we come together unified.
We were all in the same boat. Yeah.
We were all in the same boat for a moment. And it's now, you know, as the longer pandemic has resurfaced, which is racism in our country, this week has shown me that as devastating as it is, and as hard as it has been and as heavy as it has been for some of us, there are people. I went to a march on Monday, downtown Hartford, and there were just as many white faces out there marching next to me as there were black faces. We were absolutely safe. I had a mask, sanitizer. We were all good. But it was just as many people that were there who were allies as there were who had felt personally afflicted and personally affected by these things. And if that can continue, all eyes are watching. All eyes have been watching the United States for the last 4 years for reasons well beyond racism in a pandemic. And so they're still watching now. And what we do and how we handle this affects not only us, but it affects everyone. It's a global effect. And I think that is why I remain hopeful. But while I remain hopeful, I'll be honest, I don't expect much to change. I have to see a lot, and not just in the next week, in the next 2 weeks, in the next month. I have to visually see a lot happen. People have to put actions behind their words for me to really believe them. So I hope that things will be better, but I don't know how genuine we will actually see things be better.
Jen?
It was
take your time, Shannon.
No. I was hopeful, you know, to see, you know, so many different faces, you know, at these protests, you know, and so that's encouraging to see. But I'm doubtful that we'll have sustained change, and we're gonna have to take a wait and see, you know, and we know it's not gonna be an overnight thing, and hopefully this really woke up. To use the term woke, but it woke up America, specifically America and white America, that you need to have these conversations. We had a divisional meeting yesterday in which I got pretty emotional, just expressing myself and, you know, some of the hardships that I've experienced here in my life and specifically here in Connecticut. And, you know, I'm thankful I received, you know, several emails and texts. From coworkers, whether, you know, and just explaining to me, you know, thank you for, you know, the honesty and, you know, bringing up things that they hadn't even considered and thought. And I think as a whole, you know, these marches and these protests and these voices and these rallies can do the same for a lot of people who wouldn't normally think about these things. And I'm not just talking, you know, police brutality and all this other stuff. I'm talking everything all the way down the line from, you know, just how a, you know, black person in this country has to navigate and think about and worry about on a day-to-day basis. And so that's where I am on what I see.
So I think the growth of social media has actually helped kind of like this movement go forward. And I think that's kind of why Bomani, you know, seems a bit more hopeful because,
he's skeptical, by the way, just so you know.
I am, too. I'm very much skeptical. Don't get me fooled in thinking like there's actual some real actual progress without
action. Right. 1 week does not erase 400 years.
Exactly. And not only that, people literally have cabin fever because they've just been in their house because of coronavirus. So now it's like, oh, let's get outside and protest, and let's get outside and you know, go march down the street and walk to the city. Roy, you was about to.
Yeah, that's the other thing. If there was not a pandemic that made us all go into quarantine, would all of this be happening? Question. Would there be a singular focus on what's on the three deaths? Would there be a singular focus on these things?
I think the deaths would definitely be a focus, but not like this. This is definitely different. Like, and especially the way everything was just like back to back to back. There's no way this would have just been like a blip on the radar. Scratch it off. Let's go. Let's move it on. Like the videos are so graphic. They were just shared everywhere. I think, but like I said, coronavirus, you know, kind of helped this, to be honest with you. It forced people to sit down, watch what's going on in the world, think and react. And now people are reacting, which Bomani says he feels in a hopeful way. And like Tarika and like Shannon and like Roy, I still have my doubts too, as well. But at some point, I guess you kind of got to be hopeful, I guess, and hope for the best, right? You know,
I don't blame you if you're not.
You kind of got to be an optimist in some situations.
I think black people walk around every day with an ounce of optimism and an ounce of hope, because if we didn't, we'd literally be walking time bombs all day.
You'd be mentally drunk all day.
Every day. You walk around with a little bit of hope that this person isn't racist, this person isn't white, this person isn't judging me for any prejudice or any type of discriminatory reason. So all of us have a little bit of hope, but we've just been given so much proof of doubt that it's hard to move past any of that just on the surface of conversations and a week worth of people posting on social media.
Yeah, you have to hope for the best and prepare for the worst.
Yep.
I don't want to make light of the situation, but Shannon can relate to this. It's like being a Knicks fan. Like, you always have a little bit of hope, but you prepare for the worst.
And until they release an empty statement. Real quick, and I don't mean to hijack this, but I think it would be important for the conversation. If I had my daughter standing here, right?
Hey,
and I wanted her, my 11-year-old daughter, Shannon, and I just wanted her, wanted to see Stugatz. But more importantly, I wanted to at least have her.
I'm ugly, right? I'm uglier than you thought, right?
I want to have her share her thoughts on what she's seeing with these protests and what life is like for her growing up here in Connecticut. If you guys don't mind, real quick.
Do not mind, please. Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Shannon.
Hi. So I think that it's kind of scary also because just knowing some of the things that have happened in the past and how many incidents have happened like this, it does scare me at times. But then I know we also are stronger as people and we will get through it. So, yeah.
Well said, Shannon.
Yeah, that's well said.
Listen, hey, Daddy didn't force you to be a Knicks fan, did he? I mean,
I'm not a Knicks fan.
Yeah, girl.
All right.
All right.
Well, there's hope for you, Shannon.
as she gets ready for her Zoom dance class. She's Zoom in the living room. So, yeah.
How old is she, Shannon?
She's 11. She just turned 11 a couple months ago. So, okay. So as you hear from the mouth from children, and that's what they see. And yeah, you want to be optimistic, and hopefully we can. And so one more thing I wanted to say, it's very important to me, and especially with us and the type of people that you've had, and thank you for allowing us to have this platform and this format here. It's very important to hear our voices. And by our, I mean us Black ESPN employees, specifically in the audio division, and us behind the scenes. Like, it's so easy. You have so many great, on-air talent, folks who are from camera in front of the mic, but just as important is for us. It's for the Cliffs. It's for the Roys. Especially it's for the Tarikas. For us to be the voices behind the scenes that help guide and lead some of the talent, white and Black or other, on some of these discussions. And for us to have our voices and our opinions heard to help sculpt and mold these stories. You look at what these athletes, pro, college, whatever, what they look like on the field, on the ice, on the court, and most of them look like us. But the people who are telling these stories don't look like us. And it's important for us to be heard, not necessarily have to be on air, but for us to be heard and our opinions to matter behind the scenes, because we can control a lot of that. So it's important for us to be there. And so I thank you, and I don't take that lightly. And I said it yesterday in our meeting, and I've said it to several of my coworkers that I've spoke to. Like, I don't take my position here lightly and my responsibility. And I texted one coworker today. I said, for me, being that positive influence and being that voice for you at this company and this division, for me, it's just as important, and in some cases more important than the content that I produce that goes over the air. And I've said this to her many times, I'll put her on the spot, but it's so amazing to see someone like Tarika be herself and be the voice and the force behind the scenes here in this department and keeping people accountable and not having to change who she is and the voice that she has, because so few Black women are allowed to be in those type of positions in this male-dominated industry, in this white male-dominated industry specifically. So that's all I got to say about that.
Shannon, well said. Do you guys anything? Because I want to address white people real quick, okay? No, I do. Have these conversations with your kids. Have these conversations with your friends. Have these conversations with your wife. Have these conversations with Black people. Not because you feel like you have to right now, because it's the thing to do. Have them because you want to make yourself better. You want to educate yourself, and you want to help Black people, okay? Have them because you want to help yourself become a better person, because you want to be a better father, because you want this world to be a better place. Don't do it because you feel like you have to do it right now. Have them this week, next week, the following 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 month, following year. And all I can tell you four and to our audience is I promise to do that, and I'm going to do it with the four of you and other people as well, because I would like to do more episodes like this on a podcast called Stupidity, which I don't know if it's the right platform for it, but it's a platform, and you guys don't care. But it's something that I look the four of you in the eyes and tell you that I will have those conversations because I want to. And I will continue to bring you on this podcast because I want to, not because I have to. And I think that's very important. If any of you want to get some final words in here, feel free to do so. Roy?
Yeah. The real point about this is it should not take a tragedy for Black voices to be in the forefront in these things. And as you said, you need to listen. People need to listen because it's not incumbent on Black people to fix racism. We're not the ones in power. All right. So you need to listen to us, and we need to figure out a way that we can fix systemic racism. We need to figure out a way to close the wealth gap between a certain group and Black people. We need to fix these things. We need to fix the police. Because there might be good apples, but it doesn't make a difference if it's fallen from a poison tree. Okay? We need to fix these things. We need to fix them now.
Yeah, what I would say to that as a close is it's not impossible. This isn't something that is impossible to fix. This isn't something that, you know, we can say we will never see in our lifetime. It is possible. We can fix it. There just has to be a want to fix it. There has to be a change in your heart to fix it and a change in your perspective to fix it. I wholeheartedly believe people are capable of doing that. No one's born racist. It's a learned behavior. And the way you can learn to hate, you can also learn to love. And I think that is an important part, an important piece that we just have to preach and we have to continue to show and demonstrate. Thank you guys. Thank you, Stu Gods, for allowing us to do this. I appreciate more than you know. Thank you guys for the kind words and for allowing me to be on this forum with you guys. It is hard being the only Black female in radio at ESPN, not just in digital radio, not just in terrestrial radio. There are none others. So it's a lot, but working with people like you make it a lot easier, and I appreciate it. And we can do this together.
Got anything on the way
out? Yeah, I just want to finish up by saying, remember, there's no two sides to this. There's no, picking here is an option, doing this is an option. We all got to be committed towards the goal of and the systematic racism in America, because and people have to watch the rhetoric and how they talk about these things and not add deflections onto what the real storyline is. We got to stay focused, and we got to keep it going in the right direction. And again, I appreciate you for letting me hop on this platform per usual. And I hope you don't yell my name at the end of this.
I'm never going to yell your name again.
Yeah.
You guys need to stop thanking me. I appreciate you guys coming on and being so candid and honest with your feelings and your experiences. So.
Yep. Yeah, so like I said, we just need to stop, you know, giving the other side of the argument a voice. And we just need to focus on and then systematic racism and helping Black people out as much as possible. So we can, like we're set, we need to close that gap. We gotta get this nation better.
Where I'd like to pick up next time we do this, and the next time won't be very long from very far from right now, is your expectations of people like me and Stanzik and others at ESPN, white people, what we can do to help, what your expectation is of us, because I think that is one of the things I've heard here is that is a major factor. I also, there's got to be some sort of game in here that Chad, because I like games, you know that. White privilege. I want to keep playing that game, Chad, okay? The white privilege game, okay?
There has to be some sort of sounder that Roy can create, especially you guys do it, especially do it on the show, too. The white privilege sounder, please.
Absolutely. I appreciate the four. I'm sorry for what, you, what you've had to experience, and I am truly grateful that you came on and shared your experiences. Thank you to four of you.
And up.
Yeah.